Let's go ahead and open up to Genesis chapter 29 as we continue the story of Yaakov, or Jacob, who got himself in trouble with Dad in particular, and with his older twin brother, and had to leave home. Now, he's not some teenager that's out wandering around. He is about 77, which in our terms is like being in his later 30s. He is unmarried, and he has been sent out with nothing but the clothes on his back and the staff in his hand to get a wife from his cousins up in Haran. On the way there, you remember he had a vision of God, a dream of God at Bethel. And God effectively invites him to follow him as Abraham and Yitzhak had, and to let God be his God. And God promises to take good care of him and to bring him back to the promised land where the promises can come to fulfillment. And Jacob's response was effectively, well, if you'll do that, if you'll get me there and back prosperously, take care of me, then yeah, I will worship you here and I will pay out a tithe in your name for your worship. And so he wakes up and anoints the pillow that he used, the stone, as the future site of an altar, a shrine area, to fulfill his part of this bargain. And then he heads on his trip. And so we pick up the story, Genesis 29, verse 1, that Jacob went on his journey and he came to the land of the people of the east, or Paddan Aram. And he looked and he saw a well in the field, and behold, three flocks of sheep lying beside it. From out of that well the flocks were watered, and the stone on the well's mouth was large. And when all the flocks were gathered together, the shepherds would roll the stone from the mouth of the well and water the sheep and put the stone back in place over the mouth of the well. So he arrives at the outskirts of the city that is growing up where his family lives. And the procedure is that the flocks all gather to the same watering area, and they wait until everybody has arrived, and then they cooperate in taking the lock rock out of the way. This well is probably deep enough that they do not want to take the chance of someone falling in there or some animal wandering in there and falling off the edge and dying and contaminating the well. So when no one is using it, it's locked up with this great big rock in place. And so Jacob comes here and he sees these different groups of sheep, which he understands this. He knows how shepherding works and herds work because he has grown up around the tent city of his father. And he takes care of the home flocks, and he knows about watering procedures and grazing procedures and all of that. So he sees this, and he's a little taken aback that these guys are not out grazing their sheep by now. And so, speaking from a professional basis, this is what he says. Verse 4, Jacob said to them, "My brothers, where do you come from?" And they said, "Oh, we're from Haran." And he said, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" And they said, "We know him." And he said, "Is it well with him?" And they said, "Oh, it's well. And see, Rachel, his daughter, is coming with the sheep." So he's asking about his family because he needs to get connected up with them. And so now he knows his cousin is coming, the daughter of Laban, his uncle. And then he says this, verse 7, he said, "Behold, it's still high day. It's not time for the livestock to be gathered together. Why don't you water the sheep and go pasture them?" So he's like, why are you guys here in the middle of the day? Shouldn't you be out grazing your sheep by now? And they said, we cannot until all the flocks are gathered together and the stone is rolled from the mouth of the well. Then we water the sheep. So now he discovers that they've got a totally different procedure here. And it can be a bit of a problem, because if you don't have everybody there yet, you can't unlock it and get the animals watered and get out into the field. So if you got one person that's running late, it makes everybody late. So then verse 9, while he was still speaking with them, Rachel, or Rachel, came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. And as soon as Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, Jacob came near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. So even though he is 77, you should not think of him as some sort of decrepit old man. He is still very strong and capable physically, because this big stone that apparently several people normally helped move out of the way, he personally levers it away from the mouth of the well. And once he does that, he then does what it takes to get his cousin's flock watered. And this does seem that it's one of those bucket well systems where you let down the bucket on a rope and get some water, and then you pull it back up, and then you put it in a trough, and then you repeat the process over and over and over again until you've watered all the sheep. So he does that for his cousin, Rachel. Verse 11, then Jacob kissed Rachel and wept aloud. So he kisses her in greeting. This is the normal procedure, you know, the kiss on two cheeks, the little air kiss thing that's still done in Europe. He does this because she's his relative. Clearly, they've figured that out and asked one another. And then he cries. He starts crying out loud. Now, why does he do that? I'm going to suggest to you that he's homesick. He is probably several weeks away from home by now. And he's been sent away by his dad, who's angry at him. His big brother, hates him so much he wants to kill him. He has tricked both of them and probably is carrying some guilt from that. Even mom, who put him up to it, has said, no, you got to go away and you have to stay away until I tell you to come home. And so he's been pretty much orphaned. And then he now comes across a relative. And I would suggest to you, because you know how this works, is that she might, that is Rachel, might look a little bit like his mom. Kind of like a younger version, because that's just the way family resemblance works. And so it could have been that all his emotion is just drawn up to the surface by looking at her and realizing that this is his family now. She and his uncle Laban, that's his family that he's got to get tied in with because of all the stuff that's just happened. So verse 12, Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's kinsman and that he was Rebekah's son. And so she ran and told her father. So this is like a bolt out of the blue. This is something very strange, new. And so she just runs off back to home again. And as soon as Laban heard the news about Jacob, his sister's son, he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. And so Jacob told Laban all these things. And Laban said to him, surely you are my bone and my flesh. And he stayed with him a month. So it's great excitement to have a relative come from far off. No doubt, there's some family resemblance in Jacob for Laban. And so there's excitement there. Remember again, Laban's sister, Rebecca, left here 97 years ago. And there really doesn't seem to be anything about any contacts, at least not personal contacts, between them. So this is all an exciting new development. And so he says, you know, stick around, you're my family. I am happy to have you here. And so for about a month, Jacob is treated as a family guest. But eventually, that needs to change. Because remember, he's been sent up here to get a wife and to start a family. And that's not going to happen if he just keeps lounging around Laban's place as a guest. He needs to get a job. Verse number 15, then Laban said to Jacob, because you are my kinsman, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall your wages be? So it's Laban that brings up the issue. Look, you've been working for me, because Jacob apparently had. When you go to a relative's house, you typically don't just sit around and watch TV and let them wait on you hand and foot. Even if you are the laziest house guest in a family, a family member's home, you eventually go, well, I need to do something. Maybe I should help with the dishes or go get some groceries to put in the refrigerator and in the cabinet. So you do something in order to show you want to help cover the cost of you being there. Well, so he was probably helping take care of the animals and things like that. And Laban eventually starts feeling like, no, you know what? I just can't have you as a free laborer. We need to come up with some sort of pay system. So what do you want for your pay? Verse 16. Now, Laban had two daughters. The name of the older one was Leah. Now, Leah means weary or tired out. The name probably goes back to how mom felt after the birth. Maybe it was a tough birth and she was totally worn out. And so she says of the baby, you're my Leah. You're my tired out baby. And so that's probably how she got her name. The name of the younger was Rachel, which has the idea of a ewe lamb. And so probably she got her name because somebody said, oh, isn't she such a cute little lamb? And so the name stuck. So here's the two sisters. The elder of the two is Leah. And verse 17 tells us that Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful in form and appearance. So there is a contrast being played off here. There is something about Leah's eyes that are not quite right. The word literally means tender or soft or delicate. So here's the options that people have offered, is that perhaps she had some sort of eye condition where the eyes did not look right. Maybe she was cross-eyed. Maybe she had continually weepy eyes or red eyes, or maybe her eyes were off color, you know, with one eye being one color and the other eye being a different color. But there was something about her eyes that made her not look quite right. Whereas Rachel, she was just well-structured. She had that perfect proportion to her face and probably to her body. And so that is going to make it much more likely in the context of this culture that Rachel is going to get the more ready attention drawn to her. And we all know that that is unfortunately typical. Instead of doing like the scripture says and look at the heart instead of the outside appearance, people way too often start at the outside appearance and make judgment calls. But I think the next line is actually going to be more about a relationship that had started at the well over a month earlier. And that is verse number 18, Jacob loved Rachel. So when he shows up there, that's his first connection is with his cousin, Rachel. And he helps her out with the sheep, and no doubt she was very thankful for that. And they hit it off right at the very beginning. And then he goes and he lives at her house for over a month and continues developing this relationship. And he realizes, since he's been sent here to marry one of his cousins, she's the one. She's the one he wants to marry. So when his uncle says, I want to pay you, let's talk about a payment structure. He said back to him, I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel. So he says, I don't have any finances to my name. This is another reason why we can be certain he was sent packing by Father Yitzhak without anything except the clothes on his back and the rod in his hand, the staff in his hand. It was part of his discipline for having deceived him. So even though he was raised in a wealthy family, he is dirt poor. So he cannot offer the appropriate dowry for someone like Rachel right off the bat, because Rachel is a beautiful woman. She is part of a family that's well-to-do, and therefore the dowry, maybe I should break in and talk about that, a dowry was effectively life insurance paid up front in case you as the husband would die. There has to be money on account with the family and then, of course, later with the wife herself to take care of things should you pass away. And it was also alimony up front in case the marriage ended. Then the woman would have money on account to take care of herself and the kids. And so she wouldn't have to, wait for that support because it was already on account. It was already saved up. So if the family is fairly well-to-do, then you're needing to pay a pretty high dowry, pretty high bride price at the very beginning. So he has zip. So he says, I tell you what, I will work for you. And of course, his work is going to include room and board. So his uncle Laban will give him a place to sleep. He will make sure he gets fed regularly. He will make sure that he has all the necessities of life as a worker in Laban's company. And all the excess money that would normally be paid to him over and above that, that's going to be held on account by Laban as part of the dowry savings. So 7 years worth of above and beyond room and board money, that's how much the dowry was for Rachel. So I'll serve you 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel. And Laban said, it's better that I give her to you than I should give her to any other man. Stay with me. Now, that sounds really weird to us. It's almost like, oh, yeah, sure. She'd be better off with you than somebody else. And it is his way of saying, I would love it to have you as my son-in-law. And verse 20, so Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of the love he had for her. Now, 7 years is a good long time, but Moses writes down here, the story that had been passed on to him is that for Jacob, it felt like no big deal because he loves her that much. Now, they continue to develop their relationship all 7 years. You should keep that in mind because they're going to be eating together regularly. They will be having conversations, probably having downtime, leisure time spent together. So this is a 7-year betrothal period where they develop a good, strong bond with each other. And then we come to the end of the 7 years. So Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife that I may go into her, for my time is completed." So they have not had any type of sexual contact because that would have been inappropriate. It always is. You're supposed to wait until the wedding has officially happened before you become physically intimate with your spouse. That's the way it's supposed to work, folks. And all of you young or even older single people, you need to follow that procedure. You will do better in your marriage if you do that. So the 7 years are up. It's time for the wedding. So Laban gathered together all the people of the place, and he made a great feast. And wedding feasts sometimes happen about 7 days, based on some of the other things we see. So we've got all of these preparations, and everybody's invited in to participate. And the way the custom seems to have occurred is that at some point during the several days of the celebration, sometimes early, perhaps midway, maybe sometimes later in the week, the happy couple would go off and have the sexual consummation of the marriage, and that would finish the binding ceremony of their marriage. And they would be husband and wife from there on out and start raising a family together. That's when Laban decides that he can't go through with this as originally designed. Verse 23, "But in the evening he took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob, and he went into her." Remember, Leah's got the strange eyes, the eyes that make her not nearly as attractive as her sister Rachel. And so she's not been getting any offers of marriage. And Laban does not want to have an old maid daughter at home. He wants her to get married and start having kids elsewhere. And so he forces his two daughters to play a role in tricking Jacob into getting married to Leah. And I emphasize this, he makes both his daughters play this role. He makes Leah pretend to be Rachel, and he makes Rachel disappear until this scheme can come to fruition. And the way that it would have worked, and you can appreciate this, is that during these ceremonies, there is celebration, and there are alcoholic beverages available. And even though the culture teaches you do not drink to excess and get drunk and lose control of yourself, if the other person conspires against you, they might give you stronger drinks than normal. Because if you usually have watered down wine, which many of the cultures used to do, if you substituted that with a more fortified wine, topping up the cup, the person could get drunk without realizing it. And of course, that changes inhibitions and stuff like that. Also, for the nervousness of a new bride and husband even, for their first sexual encounter, often the lights are low, if maybe not extinguished in this tent, and not a lot of words are spoken. And so all of this is conspired against Jacob to get him to go in and have sexual relationships with Leah as part of the ceremony. Now, verse 24 is a real quick parenthetical comment, and that is Laban gave his female servant Zilpah to his daughter Leah to be her servant. And so she's kind of part of dad's gift to his daughter on her wedding day, somebody that has probably grown up with her, been around, and been a servant of the family. She's now going to go be part of Jacob's household, serving Leah. Well, the next line is where we'll have to pick up next time, and that is, in the morning, behold, it was Leah. It was a big shock. In the morning, he wakes up, and in the light of day, he sees those eyes and realizes he's been duped this time around. A sister pretended to be the other sister, just like he pretended to be his brother. And so we will pick up that element of the story the next time we get into God's Word.